everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Caroline Talks. This is a podcast / YouTube channel where I, your host, Caroline Hines, film critic and journalist, talk to film creatives around the world about their work, the industry, and what inspires them. And today, I'm actually very happy for the guests that I have today because one of them is writer and director Ariel Abubakar, who I previously interviewed, but through written format for his first feature film, Geram, which is in English, Salat Warriors Deed of Death, which I had a blast watching because I love action films. And this one was very heavily action oriented. And it focused on Salat, which is a Malaysian martial arts form. And that is also featured very heavily in the film we'll be discussing today, Waleed. And for Waleed, we have the lead actor, Mega Sharizal, to join us to talk about the film. So I'm very happy to have both of you to talk to me today. So for all of my interviews, I always like to ask my guests to first say a bit about themselves and what got them involved in the film industry, because the filmmaking is a very labor intensive, a very exhausting and a very particular art form where you have to, once you enter into the field, you have to know that this is what you want to do, because you really have to dedicate your time and your passion and your blood, sweat and tears to making films, because they are not easy, whether it's a short film or a feature film. So I'll begin with you, Adil. So what got you into filmmaking? Because as I mentioned at the beginning, Geram was your first feature film, but you kind of went full out with that, because you were just like, my first feature film is going to be an action. But what led you into filmmaking first?
The background, cerita background. Bila mana masuk film?
Oh, okay. Before I'm as a director, I am a cinematographer. For seven years, I'm working as a cinematographer, and three years for camera assistant, and then after 10 years I'm in Malaysia industry. I don't have a good film to make a good contribution to our people to watch film silat in my country. So I decide to produce and to write, and then I'm try to be a good director, and I try to expose martial art silat in Malaysia, because in my country we don't have, after 20 or 30 years, no silat movie. So I try to call on my networking for my brother in silat team to join our company Layar Pictures to produce my first baby Silat Warrior.
And for you, Mega, like what led to you being an actor?
Yeah, okay. The funny part of this, because I started before I became an actor, I practiced silat before. And then when I almost graduated, I started doing theater. And then when I started doing theater, which was in my early 20s, then I kind of left silat. I didn't practice it for quite a while. I focused on acting, and then from theater led to some TV work, some film works, and after few years from acting, I proceeded to start directing, and then after directing, I started to open my own company, and I've also produced and also acted and directed for TV. And then after around 15-16 years of being an actor, a director, then I met this guy. When he was doing a grant, actually we've never bumped into each other in the industry, because it's quite big, so and yeah. they needed they've actually started shooting when I got the call. And because his AD at the time knew that I have a silat background. So she called me in, and then okay, and she talked to him, and then he said, okay, come, let's cast him in this film, and then let's give him a role and give him one scene. And then finally, after at that time maybe 15-16 years, I managed to show I've never used my background in silat before Grant.
Right. So I think something that's very interesting about your films, Ariel, is that you use martial arts, basically violence, to basically elevate a story about social issues, or what some people call social justice issues. You know, in a typical action film, the violence is basically about solving an immediate problem. So you have like your protagonist, who's the hero. He will be like a martial artist. If you're going to use Asian films as an example, he will be a martial artist. And it would be that the martial arts, the action, the violence is about solving the immediate problem. Whereas for your films, the violence isn't really necessarily about solving a problem. It's more about stopping a problem from occurring. For instance, in Geran, like in the first fight, it takes place between the female lead character, who's the sister of the main character, and she has to use martial arts to get herself out of a potentially violent situation. And in this one, it happens the same way, but the difference I think between Geran and Walid is that the action comes very late in the film. Like, you know, before it's about talking, it's about discussing, and like, it's about helping us to get to know these two characters, which is Walid, the lead character, who's a teacher, and Aisha, who's this little girl who's craving for knowledge. So talk about the difference between Geran and Walid, and why you decided to basically, I think, push the action later in the film than strictly from the beginning, because I thought it was very interesting that you added it later in the film.
So I choose to put a fighting on the back because I want to tell the audience the full story and narrate their thinking about the humanity issues. So I think I'm not a action director only, but I want to be a director more on humanity film, and global issue is very tough now, and I want to contribute for our people about humanity, education, and discriminate for another people. So I used to make a first hour Walid about people, and I think is the audience we have many type of our audience to watch, and I don't care about that, and I just do what I want to do. And I need people have something when they watch the film, then and they get something a good message and a good thinking about other people.
Right, you're first of all making the story for you, and then you're also making it for your people. So like everyone else is just like an extra bonus at the end. You're just like, this story is for Malaysian people, and it's about Malaysian issues, and it's about Malaysian society, right? It's about the stories that need to be told.
The last part of fighting scene is for action fans.
Some people call it action. yeah, you're like, okay, you're just like, you know, I have to put in the action, because for you, I guess it's almost expected now that you'll have action in your films, because like Silat Warriors was, I think, highlighted Silat martial arts so heavily. Like, people would almost expect you to have it in your second film, because that's almost like what we would call your calling card or your signature as a filmmaker. You're because I remember when I was doing my research for Salat Warriors, like as you had mentioned, like Salat wasn't really featured very heavily in martial arts films for years, not just not just Malaysian films, but a lot of Southeast Asian and Asian films. Because I remember, I think we only really got, I think maybe the first time I saw Salat would have probably been On Bok with Tony Jaa. And that had a bit of Salat in it. And then of course there was, I also forget the name, but it's a film by Gareth Evans, the one with
Merantau. The first one, Merantau.
Yes, Merantau. I remember I love that film. I saw that film, and like that was then also when Salat became I think started to really get into film. But even then, a lot of people didn't really identify it. You know, a lot of people would be like, they were like, oh, is this an MMA type of thing? And you're like, no, it's like completely different. And I don't know if you know this, but actually Salat is also kind of featured in, there's a British show called Gangs of London. And Salat is actually used in that show as well. It's one of the art, it's one of the martial arts arts firms they use in it. So I would say like Salat is kind of making, slowly becoming more more widely demonstrated in martial arts films. And like, of course, now you have two films that are added to that, to that. So I think it's actually great.
Cool. Yeah.
So now for, I want now to talk about the differences in your characters, because the first film talks about, it talks about capitalism and how and exploitation of people, like stealing land and like a lot of people are conning people out of their homes and their deeds and their land, because like land is such a vital commodity. Like people believe once you have land, you have power. So that's what the first film is about. This one now is about child exploitation and kidnapping and black human trafficking. So why did you decide to pick human trafficking as the main social issue to address in this film? And why a teacher, having someone be a teacher as the hero, as the protagonist in this film, and having Megat play that teacher?
I choose to use child trafficking issue because it's a reality in front of my eyes. And I saw many when I travel, and I saw the kids and come and begging me for money, and we know that the kids have some agency exploit the kids to make the wrong way make money. And then in my field, on the real time, I have a one production shooting with me, and then some bad guy use the kids to be a talent for them, and they use a more on very very bad attitude for what we call not good for our people. And I think it's a very dangerous and critical issue, because in Malaysia is a very small community aware about the kids.
And you like becoming involved in this project, Megat, like what was the kind of research that you had to do from your end as the lead? Because this is someone who is a teacher and he's teaching underprivileged children, but he has to also, I think for this character, at first, I'm going to be completely honest with you. At first, I kind of was like suspicious of him, because like the way the film is kind of set up, it's just like, it's about being aware of the people around you, because you have to like be, I think it's for everyone to be aware of children, you know, the protecting of children. And like, you know, there's a saying that goes, it takes a village to raise kids. And like the film talks about that. It's about all of these adults around these kids being aware of them. You know, like if one goes missing, you're supposed to notice, because everyone in the village knows all of these children. You know, you'll be like, I noticed this one kid is missing. And a lot of that has to do with adults wanting to be aware. So, and for a teacher is supposed to know all of their students, you know, and they're supposed to get to know the home lives of their students and like what's going on with them. So for you, what kind of research did you do for playing this character? Because you not only have to do research about being a teacher, but also I think being a child advocate, because that's not some, I think that's something you have to consciously think about.
Yeah. Well, the challenge for me being Walid was because I'm not a father myself, but I have nephews and nieces. So I do spend a lot of time with them, and I do watch, and I do see how the parents raise them, and how concerned my brothers and sisters for my nephews and nieces' education. And this is things that I think, because I come from a middle-class background, so it's so different how these kids are treated. And then when I go to the suburban areas, it's so different. So these are things that I needed to look at, and how, especially how the public and how people perceive these undocumented children.
Mm-hmm.
So generally, they're not really positive views for this kid. So a lot of people don't really care, but then there's always that one bit, one scene in the stall which the old guy really happens. And I think those are the things that I think I needed to know, which I think it helped where I had friends who does community services, and they spent time with all these children. These children do all these so-called bad things not without any particular reason. So I think I have to put myself in a fatherly way of thinking,
right?
Approach the that's number one. And then number two, that's where the teacher comes in, which like I said, I mean, I sometimes teach acting also to kids, so that helps the how you approach kids. That's how what my approach was. But somehow to approach, I have to view these actors, these kids, as actually how they are not privileged kids. So these are the kind of things that I need to watch, to see, to research how to make this character very believable, to make him care about everyone, and also actually just put, I needed to put a reason for him to why he needed to be there. His Walid is actually an outsider. He doesn't speak the dialect of the area. He's the, among the only one who speaks differently.
Right.
He comes in there. Although he's an outsider, he's among the ones who really care about the people there. So I needed to put a reason behind his objectives. He has many objectives, but what were the reason why he needs to be there?
Yeah. Right. So you mentioned a few things that I want to talk about. The first thing is I want to talk first about the children and how people treat the children. The thing is as adults, or we know, and we should believe, and people should have the conviction that adults should be the protectors of children, because children are the most vulnerable in society. No matter where you go, children are the most vulnerable. But it's always so shocking, but also disheartening, and that it is a sad fact of life that adults will be just as prejudiced to children as they are to other adults. You know, first and foremost, no one should be prejudiced to anyone for where they come from, how they look, how they talk, and on all of these things. But when you do have the prejudice, you would think, okay, like being prejudiced to an adult is slightly different, because you would think, okay, the adult can kind of like defend themselves or speak up for themselves or whatever. But children don't have that. Children are just vulnerable, you know, like the scene you mentioned with the two men talking about Aisha in the stall. Like, I've seen things like that happen to me. That's happened to me, and I've seen things like that happen in real life. And when I can, I speak up, and, you know, like, I would say, this is a child. Why are you, like, treating a child this way? But it's always so, that's when you kind of think about one of the dark sides of humanity, where people can target children as easily as they target another adult. So that's one of the things about this film. It focuses on the different ways that children can be targeted and mistreated. Yes, people would think the most obvious villains are the human traffickers, you know, the people that are targeting and kidnapping these kids. But I think, Ariel, what you also do this film is point out there's other types of villainy in society, like the people who are racially and ethnically prejudiced against Aisha and her mom and the other kids in their neighborhood. So I want you to talk first about that, Ariel, like, to showing how, like, when it comes to villains, like, everything isn't as black and white. It's kind of funny, but you guys are wearing black and white shirts, but it's not like it's not clear, like, everything isn't black and white. Like, yes, you have the human traffickers are villains, but also, to me, I saw these old men and the people who think like them as villains as well, because they're not helping these children, you know, they're being prejudiced and racist towards children. And I'm like, you're bad too. Like, you may not be out there wielding a sword, but you're just, your remarks are just as hurtful as what is being done to these kids.
Yeah. So, tanya dalam masyarakat kita ni, yang dalam cerita ni, orang jahat tu tak clear. Hmm. Bukan je yang trafficking ni je orang jahat. Hmm. Yang pakcik tu, yang ni. So, so dia nak tak cakap pasal inilah apa benda society tu sendiri adalah jahat terhadap budak-budak ni. So itulah ni. Macam apa benda dia orang tu, bukan maknanya jahat dan baik tu bukan hitam dan putih. Mm-hmm. Dia cakap black and white tadi tu. Mm-hmm. Everyone semua dalam grey area masing-masing. Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a dignity or your heart about people. And then I think it's susah soalan tu senang. Soalan tu pasal apa? Orang punya attitude kan.
But I think, yeah, what you're talking about, while he's thinking,
you can answer, yes.
I think, yeah, what you're saying is true, because I think everyone, there's no clear bad guy here in Wally. So yes, for the film we show that the human traffickers are bad guy, but if you notice, even one of the traffickers was he wanted to fight Pak Ku because he himself has a stake at the end. So although he's a human trafficker, he's also a father. So then even so even Aisha's mother can be seen as a bad guy at one point, because she's overprotective. But eventually she sees through Walid's intention. Mm-hmm. So from even Walid himself, I think when the push comes to shove, what he did at the end is actually not nice. Mm-hmm. I mean.
Yeah,
he did what he had to do. And like what you're saying about Walid is interesting, because the thing is like at the beginning, I think he wanted to rescue Aisha and save her and teach her, because he saw her as a replacement for his own daughter who's missing, you know, like he didn't see Aisha for herself, you know, he wasn't interested in her for herself. He was just like, oh, I'm missing my daughter, so here's a replacement. So in a way, that's not bad, but it's also a way of not acknowledging her as an independent person, you know, and not acknowledging her for being herself, because she could feel like you're used as a replacement for someone is not a nice feeling. So that's a way that she would feel bad. And he unconsciously was doing that to her at the beginning. But he did get to eventually realize Aisha is Aisha, my daughter is my daughter, you know, so you have to learn how to separate. Or to separate his feelings with regards to that.
True. Yeah.
I think it's about survival for every people. So we cannot watch this anger, this mother and the traffickers and the pakcik or uncle in the stall. And this is about kemiskinan.
Poverty.
Poverty. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's all about money and the desakan hidup.
Desperation.
Desperation in their life.
Yeah, poverty can lead people to making extremely bad decisions.
Everything, do everything, every legal or illegal part, and you cannot imagine what they thinking to make money and tak pernah terfikir.
Sometimes just out of desperation, people do things out of unmanageable things. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's true because, and again, this is, I guess, like I mentioned capitalism, but yeah, it's talking about, because a lot of this is tied into capital, because capitalism has affected every country, every corner of the world, every aspect of society and culture. And it's about one of the underlying things that is so evil and so insidious about capitalism is it makes people believe that in order to be valued as a human being, we must be rich. And, you know, we must exert power over people, like to be rich, whether it's not only rich in money, but it's rich in power. And like, and a part of doing that is subjugating other people. It's about oppressing other people. And in the first film, it's about people stealing land and these gangsters exploiting people for their own land and their property and trying to say, if I own this land, I can own you. Whereas for this one, it's about exploiting these children because they pick on the most vulnerable as society, as I mentioned, the children. And there are human traffickers who traffic in human adults as well. And, you know, like sex traffickers and that. But to go after children, there has to be something in you that completely turns off. You know, like there has to be a part of you as a human being that I think you have to completely suppress and just get rid of, which is not only your conscience, but your ability to see other people as a human. And for these children, like what you're showing is like, it is like poverty has forced these people to make extremely terrible and extremely evil decisions. But it also forces people like Waleed and the other men in the community to do something that they wouldn't have wanted to do, which is violence. You know, they don't look forward to being violent. You know, they don't want to fight, but because of the situation, they're like, if the only way to get out of this situation, the only way to help these children is to basically fight and you have to get down and dirty. Just as dirty as the people you're fighting, you know. Sometimes this talking isn't going to solve every issue, you know. You like debating is not going to solve every issue, and I think that's something that your films are about. It's about showing that when at the end of the day, sometimes the best way to solve a problem is to fight. Bullies don't listen until you start to fight back. I used to be bullied in school, and they didn't listen to me until I was like, you know what? Talking will only take you so far.
Yeah, true.
It is. So now we've talked about the philosophy of the film, which is talking about the humanity of these characters and oppression and all that. Now I want to talk about, and now I'm going to segue into talking about the violence. The fight sequence, there is one particular fight sequence in this film that is, I think it's almost an hour long. Why? Why, Ariel? Why did you make such a long fight sequence? Because it's extremely hard to choreograph and to execute, but why did you think it was important to have a fight sequence this long in this film?
Because fighting is not fighting human trafficking never ending until now.
Mm-hmm.
So I choose to luar kan?
To express
the fighting when I have a power to
To destroy
our traffickers, all traffickers in the world. I used to be a terrible and very aggressive to fight them very hard.
Mm, right. Yeah. So you want Because to me, I will be honest, watching a fight sequence that long for as an audience member can be exhausting, because you're just like, wow, this is still going, it's going and going. But as you're saying, it's about, I guess, conveying the exhaustion of the situation where it is a never-ending fight in real life.
That scene is a bit, I'm feel what if they're trafficker in front of me. I do like what Walid do.
You're gonna fight them. You're just I'm gonna fight. Yeah, because it's true. Because I love action films, and there are some films I've watched with like some super long action sequences. But I think yours might be one of the longest ever.
John Wick 4 is very longer fighting from start and until the end.
Yeah, so I have to like congrats to the choreographer, to the actions, the stunt doubles, the stunt performers, the fighters, the choreographers. You have to fight. So what was it like for you getting back into doing practicing a lot? Like what kind of like training? Because you said you hadn't practiced like you said almost 20 years. So what was it like getting back into showing this side of you? As I guess as a performer now, because you're like, I'm an action star now.
Wow, action star. Wow. Yeah. Although I don't practice it a lot, but I do. I mean, whenever I got time to go to the gym, I do still try to do some stretches or exercises. Okay. Yeah, but I do try to train, keep my stamina, my leg up, still have that kick. But the good thing with I think the funny thing about Walid itself is the process of going into the training is actually his casting process. Because we shot another project a few months before, which had some, not as much as action as Walid, but we had some fight scenes. So after that project was done, he told everyone to okay, let's just go back and start training because we're going to shoot Walid in 2 months. Okay, so I went back. Started training, went cycling, or started going to the gym, do all those routine punching bag, and I actually got my stamina back up, and I lost 5 kgs, and which suddenly I got a text from him, and because after I went one of the cycling trips, I posted it online. And suddenly, after the post went up, I got a text from him telling me, hey, please, don't lose so much weight. because at that time, nobody knew who's going to play who. I didn't know that I was going to play Walid. Only 2 weeks before the shoot, everyone knows who's going to play who. So when I got that text, I'm like, why is he sending this? He doesn't want me to lose weight. So again, I'm like, okay, maybe because, like I said, Walid is my first time playing a lead role. Before this, I'm so used to playing supporting roles, antagonists, or comedic roles. Doesn't cross my mind because going to this, going past 40, I've never ever thought of being a lead role anymore. I mean, I'm just saying the reality how it is in Malaysia. People past 40, it can rarely be casted as a lead role, someone who looks like me. And then, but again, I didn't stop training until when he announced who's going to play who. We went to the location and we worked. The good thing is 99% of all the performers of everyone had silat background or martial art background. And we trained near where the set is, and every day before the shoot began, And then even when the shoot was when the shoot was happening, whenever I don't have any scenes, we will still train or choreograph. So when it's time to go into the scenes, it didn't take that long. I mean, the each major fight that I did only took one day to shoot.
Oh.
Yeah. It's
very impressive.
So it was preparation before, and then when we came in, we just and one day is just basically 12 hours or less. So that's how long it took.
And Ariel, why did you wait so long to tell him that he would play Waleed?
I had three choices to cast to play as Waleed.
Mm.
So, but the three the first and second have a stereotype as her hero.
Oh, okay.
So I don't think it's a very. I used to change our mindset. Hero is not only the tough guy or
muscle
and got good looking and not. My guy is also good looking, but the size, oversized. So I don't want to follow normal direction. So I always against normal direction.
Right, you didn't want to follow the typical society idea of it.
The right word.
And I understand that because it's about anybody can be a hero, you know, as long as you gather up the courage to be a hero. Like, you are a hero, and it doesn't only have to do with fighting, as you said. Like, fighting was the last resort, but it's about standing up for people, you know, speaking out, like, as Waleed did, like for Aisha. He was speaking out against those men being racist towards her, being prejudiced towards her, but also he's also a hero for those kids, you know. He's teaching them how to read, he's giving them knowledge, and knowledge is power. So that's being a hero too. I always say teachers are a special breed, because everyone isn't called to be a teacher. Being a teacher is not easy. And like a lot of people, like, they see teachers as unsung heroes. So I understand they needed to cast someone like Megat, because like you're trying to show that anyone has the capability to be a hero as long as they have the courage to step up.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And one of the other things that you mentioned, the casting, Megat, where, like, you said, like, over like 90% of everyone had either a Silat or martial arts background. And I remember I read that when I was doing my research for Giran before, because like Silat used to be taught at the schools and is taught as like is a very common activity for people to learn in Malaysia at very young ages. So I think that's just such a special thing, where you're like, as part of our culture, like, we're taught this martial arts, this art form as a part of our culture. But another thing about the film, Ariel, that you did for both Giran and for this, is that you cast people who are basically novice actors, you know, like, this is their first time on screen, and you're basically giving these people an opportunity to enter into an industry that they would have never necessarily thought of entering, you know, like being actors, working behind the scenes, you know, and giving like Silat practitioners also a work as like stunt performers, you know, giving them an opportunity to enter into the industry that way. So I want you, Ariel, to talk about casting people who wouldn't necessarily would have thought of becoming actors, for instance. Like, you have like people that like, you can like, as like, from my own critical perspective as a film critic, like, when I'm watching films, I can tell who is a trained professional actor and who isn't. And I think that it adds a special quality to the films, and it adds a realness where, like, people be like, okay, so like, this person's timing isn't exact. And like, you can tell when they're thinking about their lines and they're trying to say, don't look at the camera too much. You can tell when people are trying not to look at the camera, and that's the difference between a trained actor and a novice. But why is it that you always choose to work with novice performers, and you're just going to be like, I'm going to get someone who's never acted a day in their life to be in my film? Why do you do that? I need to know.
I love to give opportunity for another people don't have chance to involve in our industry. So I think it's my race to get them join me for two movies. And I don't think it's a very they can explore and more exposure for martial artists. We don't have martial artists before this, and now I'm create the team, Granian team, to give exposure for another martial art in my country.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know why I choose them, because I think it's about attitude, discipline, and they want to hear what I'm want to say, and they follow, and they don't have any against what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then so direction is smoothly, and when you shooting in 35 days, so smooth, and the result is come out. I'm so happy because I have a team give full commitment to finish it about a full movie in 35 days.
Yeah, and I think that's actually very important, because in the Malaysian film industry, like, this is one that is still not internationally known. I don't want to say, because I don't want to downgrade the importance, but I think it's just like you're introducing a new generation of film creatives in the Malaysian and the Asian film industry. You know, when people say, okay, we need we want to feature like Salat in our film, like they have your team to go to, you know, they have you as an example and as a consultant to say, this is how you can build a team of professional Salat stunt performers, you know, like, and not only just the Salat, but also like actors, you know, like especially because a lot of your both films feature a lot of young people. So it's like giving them opportunities to work, not just in front of the camera, but behind, you know, because you need a crew behind the camera. Like, you know, everybody will be like, oh, I want to be an actor. I'm like, okay, you want to be an actor. Who's going to be the director? Who's going to be the DP? Who's going to be the cameraman? Who's going to do the rigging? You know, who's going to do craft services? Who's going to do costume director, lighting? You need to introduce people into all of these aspects of the film industry. And this is how, like, working with you and working with your team and working with like Megat, because as you mentioned, you have a production company, is about, I guess you could say, helping the Malaysian film industry survive. You know, you can't survive with just veterans. You know, you need like new blood. You need like younger people to believe that they have a future in the industry as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
I think the most interesting thing for me doing both Grant and Walid, because not everyone is professional, meaning not just in front of the screen. Behind the screen, we have so many people trying to contribute, trying to give, because it's like it's so different working in a professional setting and working with Walid and Grant, because it feels like a community. For example, you mentioned craft services. The person who did craft services for Walid, he's actually not a professional film worker, but he spent his time, everything he does voluntarily. He doesn't even complain, and he's, I mean, that's just, for me, it's just so touching. I mean, I love the feeling that we had while we shot this.
Yeah, I think it's important. I always try for my work to highlight all of the behind the scenes work as well, because as I said, like, these films can't only happen with the director and writer and actors. We have hundreds of people behind the scenes working to have these films brought to life. And like, you have to, as you mentioned, like the craft services and all of this, and like, it's always important to show people that the film industry is more than just this camera, what you see on screen. You know, the film industry is about this whole world that exists behind the camera. And like, films like this, especially independent films, that's one of the reasons I love speaking to independent filmmakers, is because they're and a lot of people don't really pay attention to it, but like the film industry that we, and this is just globally, wouldn't exist unless people are showing, unless people like filmmakers like you, Ariel, show that there is a potential, you know, like there's all of these different aspects of working in the industry, you know, being an artist, like people, everyone can't have the ability to be an actor. So you can't be an actor. You want to be working in the film industry, go and do production design, you know, go and learn lighting design, you know, go and learn craft services, go and learn how to feed people. You know, if you have a passion for cooking and you want to work in the film industry, you can work in craft services, you know. So it's about, as you said, like building a community behind the scenes, and film is a community. It's like every film set is like basically like a little world, you know, a little enclave. And I think that's important with what you're doing, what both of you are doing, is I think keeping the Malaysian film industry alive, you know, especially attending, like doing international screenings, like what you're doing in New York now, is a way to highlight it. Is a way to highlight it for people around the world. Because I'm gonna keep it 100. Like everyone, when people think film and when they think Asian film, they think Japan, China, Korea, and perhaps Singapore. And I'm like, no, Malaysia is still there, you know, Thailand is still there, Vietnam is like still there, you know, all, especially like Southeast Asian countries do kind of get pushed to the side and like don't really get acknowledged. But I'm just like, nah, you gotta start bring everyone together, because this is the only way that it can survive.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you. I think our time is up. So I want to thank both of you for joining me. I'm wrong. Okay. So my last question I want to ask both of you is, what was the hardest part of making this film and what was the easiest part of making this film? And it can be taught, it could be doing the action choreography, it could be the dialogue, it could be, you know, like working in the heat or whatever. Like, what was the most challenging aspect of making this film for you? And then what was the moment where you were having the most fun making this film?
The hardest part to making a film is find the budget.
Yes.
And senang?
Easiest.
The easiest one is
easiest or funnest?
Making a film.
Making the actual film is the easiest and the funnest part for you, because you're like, once I have the money, I'm set. You're like, everything can happen now. Yeah. It's true. Money does make everything easier.
For me, what was the hardest part during the shoot was we were still fighting COVID. So while doing the fight scenes, I mean, it's funny because we've already done all the dramatic parts, we were fine. But when I got to my fighting scenes, suddenly one day I found out that I was positive. And I had to quarantine for 5 days. And then while they continued on shooting, and then came back on set, still having some, still feeling sick. I mean, I was already negative, but still feeling sick and trying to continue the fight scenes while still feeling a bit sick. So that's the hardest part during the shoot. But the easiest part is playing Walid. I mean, it's just, I think I didn't skip a beat. I mean, when he named the cast, I mean, I was like, oh, okay, this is my chance. This is my shot. I didn't have any doubt at all. I'm going to jump to the role without question and do as best as I can.
You're like, this is my moment to be the leader. Yes. You're like, seize the moment.
Yes.
Yeah. Again, thank you so much, both of you, for talking with me. I wish I could have done it in person in New York. I'll get to New York one day. But thank you so much. Yeah. Or maybe Malaysia, because one of my dreams is to go to like different Southeast Asian countries, partly for the view, but mostly for the food.
You can ask my agent now.
Yes, I'll be like, So definitely once I do make it down to Malaysia, I'm going to speak it into being. Once I make it down to Malaysia, I'll definitely give you guys a look, see and a shout.
Sure.
Thanks so much. And congratulations on the film and showing it internationally.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us. Yeah.
Thanks. So everyone, that was another episode of Carolyn Talks. And today I was joined by writer and director Ariel Abubakar and lead actor Megat Sharizal to talk about their film, Walid, which is Ariel's second feature-length film. His first feature film is Gilan, also titled Silat Warriors Deed of Death. That I did that one, the interview that I did for that one was a written interview. So I'll post the link for that in the description box as well, and my review for the film as well. And this one, Walid, is very different, but also similar to in great ways to Gilan. And this film is, I think this film is like, I love films like this where, yes, it's an action film, but it's also a film about social awareness and basically social commentary on the state of not only, I think, Malaysian culture, but I think a lot of culture, countries around the world, because human trafficking is a global issue. It's a crime that happens in every corner of the globe. And while I was watching the film, it made me think of like being here in Toronto and living in North America, about the advocacy work of the groups that does missing and murdered Indigenous women, and like so many children around the world are taken from their homes and just like sold for slavery, sex slavery, indentured servitude, and they're exploited and killed, and it happens all over the world. And the film is, yes, set in Malaysia, but it's also, I think, a reminder that adults should step up. You know, if you see something wrong, say something, step up. And that's what happens with the character of Walid, played by Megat. And it's just like, he didn't set out to be a hero, but he ended up being one simply because he gathered up the courage to speak on behalf of this child, to protect the children that he teaches, and to find the courage to act. And that's so many of the world's problems, I think all of them, could be solved with if everyone found the courage to just act, to just say something. So I appreciate Megat and Ariel for taking the time to talk to me about the film and just about the messages of the film and the things that affect society that we can do to affect change. And I wish both of them, the entire team, his agent Imanto, all the success, and I can't wait to see what Ariel does next, because I want to see what he does with Silat, because as we mentioned in the interview, this film has an almost hour-long action sequence, and if he ever does that in another film, like, kudos to him and his team. Like, that's amazing. It was exhausting to watch, but like, I'm just watching it, imagine having to do it. But again, thank you so much and congratulations to them. And you can find the video version of this interview on my YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/@Carolyn_Hines. Find links on my Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at the handle at CarrieCNH12. That's CarrieCNH12. Go to my R3 page, where you can find links to the podcast and my other two podcasts that I host, as well as all of my writing. There, and that's authory, authory.com/Carolyn Hines. And all of the interviews that I've been doing for the real, what am I saying? All the interviews that I've been doing for the New York Asian Film Festival. I have TIFF coming up, so that's another set of interviews that you can look forward to, as well as interviews that I've been doing for the African American Film Critics Association. Those are not in podcast form, those are only in videos on my YouTube channel only. And I think that's it. So until the next episode of Carolyn Talks, everyone, stay safe. Bye.